Morning.
Morning.
All right, we're going to be reviewing our last section that we've finished up here. So may get into some of the new stuff, probably not today, but we're going to go ahead and review the sections that we just finished up here. So where was Paul headed?
Rome,
yeah. I can't throw y'all candy because I don't have enough. Yeah, this is a pretty easy one, right? So Paul was heading to Rome. Now, what year would this have been that they left? That one's mine. No. Anybody? No, you're close though. Nope. We can keep guessing, but it's 60 to 61. So, right about that time frame. All right. So, how is this voyage different? How is the voyage that Paul's going to take from Jerusalem to Rome, technically from Caesarea to Rome, how is this voyage different? Okay, he was a prisoner. That's definitely a big portion of it. And the Romans paid for the trip. Those are the two big ones. Now, here's another one. Here's a question. How is it similar? Okay. Okay. But we don't have recorded shipwrecks in other ones, right? We don't have other recorded shipwrecks in his missionary journeys. But how is it similar?
He predicted the wreck.
Okay. He did predict the wreck. Kendall? Right there. Say here, I'm going to come up because I want people to hear this one. This one is similar in this way.
He was traveling with the same companions.
And do you have an idea who those people are?
Luke, for sure.
So who's the first one again?
Luke.
Okay, you can stop there. And you can pick a candy. Okay, so that was one of the things I wanted to get at, is that Paul was traveling with companions, Luke being one of them. Anybody remember the other one? I know Kendall, go ahead.
Aristarchus.
Man, I'm going to have to throw you another piece of candy. Piece of candy. Watch out, Dan. I'm a terrible shot. All right. So Luke and Aristarchus are traveling with Paul. This is one of the ways that it is a similar journey. Obviously different because the Romans are paying for it and he's a prisoner. Anybody remember, this is actually a little bit of a review from the section before we covered, but we did mention it at the beginning, is how many times had Paul defended himself in various trials in Jerusalem and Caesarea? We can work through them if you want. So what was the first time? Yeah, he's in Jerusalem. So when did he first have to make a defense for himself and for the gospel? Who was he speaking to? This is kind of like in the study of the missionary journeys, this is kind of like the Sunday school answer for the kids when they always say God. You can say the Jews. Because they had to defend them. He had to defend himself first against the Jews. And that was in the general mob. And then where did he go from there? Pardon me? Yep, that would have been in Caesarea. So Festus is one of them. There's basically first and the last. Where did he go after when the mob caught him? Where did he go from there? What's that? The Sanhedrin. Okay, watch out. I made it close. All right. So that he went to the Sanhedrin. That was the second place, right? It makes sense. The Jews rile up the mob. He has to defend himself against the mob. He's then basically taken into custody and he goes before the Sanhedrin. Brad had mentioned Festus, but he went to somebody else first.
Felix.
Hope you like Skittles. Felix. And then there was one last one. We spent quite a bit of time talking about him and his family tree. Herod Agrippa. Would you like to pick a piece of candy, Mr. Simpson? Oh, come on. Your wife wants one. they refused the candy. So no more questions for you. No, just kidding. All right. So five times he had had to basically defend himself before he had even left Caesarea. So there were three main legs to the journey. Now, there's a lot of places mentioned in here, but the scriptures talk about three main legs of this journey. So anybody give me the first one? Starts in Caesarea, I'll give you that. He goes around it. That's part of it. But there was a destination that they had in mind. Pardon me? You're skipping a little ahead. So their main goal was to get to Myra, the first leg. So Caesarea all the way around, and then stop up in Myra, right? So that's the first leg. The second leg ended in a shipwreck. So that should give you the clue. Where was Paul shipwrecked? Malta. So they went from Myra to Malta, and then Fairhavens is in between there with Phoenix and so on and so forth. And then the last leg, pretty obvious, from Malta to Rome. So there's, pardon me? Oh, sorry, I thought somebody said something. So Malta to Rome was the last leg of that journey. All right. We already talked about this, but Paul begins in Caesarea. And they are, how long though, before, well, when Paul arrived in Caesarea, how long was he there before they left? 2 years. Good job, Super Dave. Have a Twix. There's lots of kids. If you guys don't want them, the kids will eat them. So, all right. So yes, it was 2 years. So who was responsible for getting Paul to Rome? Who was charged with this? Get this guy to see Caesar. Can anybody give me his occupation? Yeah. He's a centurion. And if anybody can give me their name, his name, that'd be cool, because we did mention it a few times. Julius. Hey, good job, man. You can pick one. I'm close. All right. So, centurion by the name of Julius was put in charge of getting Paul to Rome. We already talked about this as well, but I want to make a couple of quick mentions. So Luke was one of the traveling companions. What was his occupation? Everybody should know this one. Physician, right. He was called, Paul calls him the beloved physician in Colossians chapter 4. And then Aristarchus, we talked a little bit about him, but where was he from? He's actually mentioned a few times. What did you say? Yeah, good job. Skittles? Starburst? All right. So Aristarchus was a Macedonian of Thessalonica. We may come back to some questions on Aristarchus. I want to get through the rest of these. So when they leave from Caesarea, Luke describes the ship on which they are departing. Anybody tell me what it was called, what kind of ship it was? Admiridian, right. Would you like a candy? You don't have to have a candy. Okay. So it's an Admiridian ship. All right. So when they first leave, what island did they sail under? Somebody mentioned it earlier. Cyprus, right. All right, Will. Not good. Why did they sail under Cyprus? What was the issue? Protection from the winds. I'll get you another one later. I don't want to hit anybody. Well, maybe. All right. So they sail under the island of Cyprus. They sail under it because of the strong winds. And then, they, of course, they continue off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia. What was significant about Cilicia? What city? Yep. Kevin, would you like another candy? Okay. Well, off the ceiling. They're hard to throw because they all those little wings on them. But just move closer, I guess. I don't know. All right, so Tarsus was in Cilicia, which is, of course, where Paul was born and where he was educated for much of his life and spent some, obviously, a lot of time in Jerusalem as well. All right. Couple of geography questions. I know a lot of you just love geography questions. What province is Myra? In what province is Myra, where they were first landing, where their first leg of the journey was? Yep, Lycia. Did you look at a map? That's all right. It is open book. That's Lycia. Okay? All right, so let's jump into the second leg of the journey. From Myra, they were heading to Malta, but it, you know, a little bit of fun along the way. When they leave Myra, they take the slow boat to what island? Crete. Okay, remember they were trying to get ultimately to Rome, but they ended up going around Crete, and it was slow sailing for a lot of days. A couple of cities that we mentioned there, like Cnidus, but the wind forced them to sail westward under Crete, off of a promontory point, and that's the one that's on the eastern edge of the island. Anybody remember what that one's called? What's that? Good. What's that? Yeah, it was part of it, but there's a promontory point off the island. It was called Salmone. It's that kind of weird jutting piece off the eastern edge of the island. All right. So they eventually tried to get to, David mentioned this earlier, to Fair Havens. It was on the south portion of the island. They spent a lot of time there. Why did they spend so much time in Fairhaven? Yeah, it was winter. The weather, it was bad sailing weather. Because they were trying to get, of course, onto Rome. But by the time that they had left, and by the time they got there, it was very dangerous sailing season. Because as the scripture puts it in Acts chapter 27, verse 9, the fast, or the Day of Atonement, was over. So, what time of year would this have been in? You're close. It's somewhere over September, October, by the time they had gotten here. So you'll get a Snickers. Dave's just going to have all the candy. All right. So what advice did Paul give them? Don't leave, right? He's like, this, if you guys leave, this voyage is going to end in disaster, as he puts it. He said that there would be loss of cargo and ship, and that people would probably die. So let's not do this, fellas. And of course, they went anyway. Who persuaded Julius? Because remember, Julius was the guy who was in charge of this prisoner ship. Who persuaded Julius to continue anyway? Okay, the captain's one of them. But there's one other guy. The owner of the ship will call the captain. Yeah, the helmsman or the pilot. So why do you think they took their advice? This is just, you know, food for thought. Watch out, Wayne. Yeah, they leaned on their own experience. Huh, maybe there's a lesson in that. But, all right, so the harbor at Fair Havens was not suitable for winter, so they tried to get to another city, which was further west. What was it called? Phoenix, yeah. So when they did eventually leave Fair Havens, what was it that lured them to leave? Pardon me?
A fair sailing wind.
Yeah, fair sailing wind. That was, somebody else is going to answer. Well, I'm going to throw it anyway because I want to. So it was a fair south wind, right? So this is what kind of lulled them into thinking that the weather's changing. We can take advantage of this. We can get to Phoenix where there's better portage and stay there for the winter. But, of course, we know that that did not work out very well. So while they were leaving to go from Fairhaven to Phoenix, another wind came up. Can you tell me what that wind was called? What was that? Yeah, you're close. Yeah, you're a kilo. Or a nor'easter, essentially. So what ends up happening, and the literal term for that is wind wave, and it's a wind with hurricane force. So this wasn't just a, you know, a thunderstorm that came up on the ocean. It was a big deal, or on the sea, I should say. All right, so a lot of things, a lot of detail in there I don't want to necessarily spend too much time on. But they were at the mercy of the winds. And what did they do to lighten the ship? Yeah, they started throwing stuff overboard, right? What else did they do to the ship? Somebody who hasn't answered yet. What else did they do to the ship besides trying to lighten it? Okay, not yet. They didn't throw the anchors quite yet. Okay, somebody raise your hand and give me a... Brad. No, not yet. Now, I'm not talking about lightening the ship. I'm talking about what else they did to secure the ship. Sue?
They crisscrossed the cables underneath.
Very good. They crisscrossed the cables underneath. This was an important aspect to keeping the ship secure so that they could continue to sail. So that was definitely, and a lot of the other things you guys had mentioned was were true as well, but in this particular case, they had undergirded the ship with cables. Then they struck the sail, and they started dragging the stuff behind them because they wanted to try to slow the ship. All right. Who visited Paul to encourage him during this tumultuous time? An angel, right. So, what did the angel tell him? Don't fear. Don't be afraid. You have to go somewhere. Where does he have to go? Why? He's got to go to Rome to witness to Caesar, essentially. Okay? So, this was what that angel had essentially told him. And what did Paul do after he heard this from the angel? Okay. He encouraged everybody, right? He didn't just sit on the information. He knew the angel, what he was telling him was true. And so Paul encourages everybody, and then they eventually take some food. And he tells them specifically that no lives would be lost, but only the ship. Oh, what did he also tell the sailors that they probably didn't really want to hear? What was that? That they should eat. That they probably did want to hear that because they hadn't eaten for a while, but that's good. But you're a sailor. What should your boat not do? Run aground. Who said that? Mr. Polk, you can't hide over there, bud. Here you go. You don't have to try to catch either. That's right. They didn't want to hear that. I mean, Paul told them, the ship's going to run aground. You're a sailor. Your job is to keep the boat afloat. And he tells them, it's going to run aground. And he says, on a certain island. All right. So, obviously we talked a little bit about this as well, but he was shipwrecked on Malta. But before they were shipwrecked, anybody remember how long they were being tossed about in the sea? 14 days, you said that. I'm going to throw you a starburst. These are harder. Whack. I'm almost getting there. All right. So they were at sea for about 2 weeks before they crash, or they shipwreck in Malta. So they did. How did they know that they were getting close to shore? Depth soundings. Okay. How did they do a sounding? Okay. Somebody who hasn't answered yet. remember? Anybody? They stuck a thing down. Basically, it was a weighted line, right? It was a line with a weight on it, and it was, but it was measured. So they knew how long and how long the rope was, so they knew how deep it was, right? So they took soundings. They wanted to figure out how close the shore was. Anybody remember how long, how many feet are in a fathom? 6 feet in a fathom. Josh is sitting in the right place. They're 6 feet in a fathom, and of course, the decreasing measurements meant that they were getting closer to the shore. So, we talked a little bit about this as well, but they lightened the ship. They threw the wheat into the sea in daylight. They tried to run the ship into a bay. The prow of the ship ran aground where two seas met, and the stern began to break up. So the ship is now shipwrecked. It's stuck, starting to fall apart. What were the Roman soldiers planning to do with the prisoners? This should be easy. They were going to kill them, right? We talked quite a bit about that. How many of them made it to land? Every single one of them. Anybody remember how many that was? What was that? 276, Will, I'll get you candy later. 276, all of them. Everybody, every soul on that ship made it to land, just as the angel had told Paul. How long did they spend on the island? 3 months. Okay, so what? You're going to be a popular guy with the kids, Dave. All right, so they spent 3 months on the island, and what? How did Luke refer to the inhabitants of the island? Barbarians, right. Why did they call them barbarians? That was Mikkel. You can keep it. Because they didn't speak Greek. Was that you, Elijah? It's because he didn't speak Greek. Anybody know what language they spoke? What they probably would have spoken. That deserves candy. Yeah, French. Nope. It was a little bit of a side note. They probably spoke Phoenician. Okay? So it was not the primary language. They were certainly pagans, but they weren't barefooted savages. They were civilized people. They just didn't speak the Roman dialects or the Greek dialects. What happened? What was one of the first things that happened on the island in Malta that was remarkable? Snake bite. Right. He was bitten by a viper. What did the barbarians, quote unquote, think about this? Yeah, that's obvious. They thought he was going to swell up and die. But specifically, there was something... Yeah, thanks, Kevin. They thought he was a murderer. And they thought who, in reference to one of their gods, didn't let him escape. Pardon me? No, it was more simple, more generic than Hermes. Justice. That justice did not let him escape because they considered him to be probably a murderer because he's on this, right, on this prisoner ship. So justice is what they had figured hadn't let him escape. All right. We talked a little bit about this, so I'm going to try to phrase the question in such a way that it makes some sense. This particular instance and the pagans' reaction to what happened to Paul is almost the reverse of what had happened in what other city? This one's from a while ago. Okay. You're thinking Athens, but you're a little further ahead. It was in Lystra, remember? That's when they thought that they were Zeus and Hermes, right? Because Paul was the speaker, he was Hermes, and they figured Barnabas was Hermes, right? Or Zeus. So here's the thing, is that this illustrates the the lack of really depth of understanding that the pagans had, even amongst their own religions. So anyway, that's a whole other subject that we covered, that we spend some time on. All right, so Paul heals somebody, a pretty important fella, on the island. Who was it that Paul had healed? And it was not the guy's name. The guy's name is actually not mentioned in Scripture. Instead, it's one of his relations that are mentioned in Scripture. I know you know, Will. Pardon me? Okay, it's the father of whom? Yeah, Publius or Publius, however you say his name. I don't know who said it over here. Oh, okay. Good job. Did you give her the answer? Okay. All right, so he heals Publius, his father. Just as a side note, it was dysentery and a fever. Not a good way to die. Anybody else that he'd healed? Did he heal anybody else while he was on the island? Yeah, pretty much anybody that had diseases. That wasn't anybody specifically mentioned, but he had healed pretty much anybody who had come to him with illnesses. When they were leaving, there are two things that the islanders did for Paul and his traveling companions. What were they? There was one specifically to Paul, and the other was for everybody else. Okay, yeah, paid for their trip. He provided basically everything that they needed. You know, you've got 276 people on a boat. You're going to need food. You're going to need provisions. You're going to need water. You're going to need all kinds of stuff. So they basically helped to provide everything that they needed. Now, part of it, of course, you think about it, they would have been catching a Roman ship or a ship that would already have been heading north, so they didn't need tackle and they didn't need a lot of stuff like that, but they still needed the basic provisions. And then there was one other thing that they did specifically for Paul. Yeah, gave him gifts. Things that were specific to them. Things like, you know, maybe some nice macaroni necklaces or something. I don't know. Whatever it was that they gave him, it was gifts that Paul could take with him. We don't know exactly what they were, but thinking through that situation, it probably would not have been anything of great monetary value, but instead would have been of great sentimental value. All right, so then they leave Malta, and they're heading eventually to Rome. Anybody remember, by the way, this is a little backing up just a little bit, what city, what area they most likely landed in Malta? St. Thomas Bay. Why do we have that? What evidence do we have to support that it was probably St. Thomas Bay? Okay, there's one. Two seas came together, the Adriatic and the Mediterranean. That's one. Dave, anybody else? You know, the anchors were found. I know you don't want candy, so I won't bother. And there was one other thing. What's that? The depth of the water. So the physical evidence, as well as the archaeological evidence, supports St. Thomas Bay as being the most likely place where they shipwrecked. All right. When they left Malta, what kind of ship was it? Alexandrian. And somebody besides Will, the twin brothers. Thank you. So the twin brothers, anybody remember what their names were? Stacy? Castor and Pollux. Okay? The twin figureheads, the twins that were on the front of the ship. So it's Castor and Pollux. When they leave Malta, they sailed to what city? It's also the name of a college, and actually a city in New York. Syracuse. All right. What island is Syracuse on? Sicily. Syracuse and Sicily. It's the ball that the boot is kicking in Italy. So, all right. Then they sailed. They circled around a city, ended up to Regium. It's on the southwest extremity of Italy. Nobody remembers that one. That's why I didn't ask. And then they sailed on and landed at another city, which we spent some time talking about. And it was the beginning of the Roman road for where they actually got on the land. Anybody remember that one? That's a little different name. It's called Puteoli. It's where they departed the ship, and then they start heading north to Rome. How long did they stay in Puteoli? This particular length of time is mentioned two other times in Paul's missionary journeys. Nope. I think I heard, saw you say it. Seven. Yeah, is that you, Drew? Who was it? Justin? Oh. Gotta speak up, Justin. They stayed in Puteoli for 7 days. Why do you think he stayed there for 7 days? Break bread. All right. So he probably stayed there to break bread because 7 days was a kind of a standard length of time that Paul would spend when he could. Anybody remember the other two cities that it's mentioned that Paul stayed 7 days? It's not in this particular section, of course. It's in previous sections. Sorry, who said that? Nope. Sorry, I just want to make sure I heard what you said. When you get tired, you want to stay, right? So tire is one of them, and the other one starts with a T. Troas. Okay? So Troas and Tyre are the other two cities where it's specifically mentioned that Paul had spent 7 days. When they're in Puteoli, where did brethren come from when they heard that he was in Italy? Which would have been called Rome at the time, of course. They heard these people were from this city, and they heard Paul was in, we're just going to say, Italy. What city were they from? Yes. That's where they went to. Where did they come from? It's a little tricky when you read that scripture, because you first think that that's where they came from. It's not where they came from. They're from Rome. They're actually from the city of Rome. And they came to the market and to the three inns. Okay, so, Mr. Tool, you should get candy for that. Well, you answered the next question. So, the market of Appius and the three inns. Okay? So, the brethren come down from Rome, and they come down and they meet him a couple of locations along the way. And Paul, of course, is greatly encouraged by them. So Paul finally arrives in Rome. And what was Paul permitted to do? To dwell by himself. I know somebody over here said it. Ah, yeah, to dwell by himself. So he wasn't under, like, lock and key as much as a regular prisoner would be. But he was able to live by himself. Now, he did have a prisoner that stayed, a guard that lived with him. But Paul, especially as we continue on in the next section, you'll see that Paul was actually given a tremendous amount of freedom. Okay? So he was able to live by himself. He was able to receive visitors, so on and so forth. And we'll talk about a lot of that section as we move forward. Where had Paul written previously of his desire and prayers to go to Rome? What book? There's a couple. But one specifically, he says, I can't wait to make it to Rome. Basically. What book would he have written that in? It was a letter to a church in Rome that he wrote to them, I can't wait to see you. So he had written in the book of Romans, in his letter that he wrote to them, that he was really excited. He really had a desire to meet them. Of course, when he wrote it, he didn't know he was going to be doing so under being a prisoner, of course. But that was his specific reference there. All right. Let's go back. I want to talk real quickly about Aristarchus, because he's one of those guys that he doesn't get a lot of... he's mentioned a few times, but I think it illustrates just how important, and I don't even like to use the term, you know, the main guy, the people who aren't the main people are, you know, the secondary people, how important they are. So Aristarchus, we talked a little bit about him, but he was a Thessalonican of Macedonia. Anybody else remember some of the things that Aristarchus had encountered with Paul on his missionary journeys? Any other cities that he may have been in besides Thessalonica? No? He was one of the guys that faced the mob in Ephesus. He also had returned with Paul to Asia, and Paul later describes him in very like terms to himself. And this would have been in his letter to the Colossians, Colossians chapter 4, and also in his letter to Philemon. But he calls Aristarchus his fellow prisoner, okay, and his fellow laborer. Now, Aristarchus is one of those guys that I think if anybody needs an idea for a message, there's a great message in Aristarchus. But I don't want to preach necessarily. But Aristarchus is a super important guy, and especially in this particular set of journeys. All right, I have a whole bunch more questions, but I think you guys are getting worn out. Any comments or questions before we wrap up early? If you need a sugar buzz, talk to Super Dave.
I kind of spent the week thinking something over about what you said about Paul last week, his approach when he was healing those people on that island, and you talking about like a lot of those people maybe didn't even get the... He tried to get the gospel to them, but his approach was to help them first.
Yep.
And it makes me think, like, sometimes we get off in our thought of what comes first. Because if I say, what's the greatest commission, our mind would say to seek and save the lost. But that's biblically wrong. Mm. When Jesus was asked that question, the answer was to love God and then love your brother. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we just go out and we're trying to blast this at people, like, accept Jesus. Mm-hmm. But we see a lot of approaches in the Bible where Jesus healed people, Paul healed people, and some of those people never accepted Christ. Mm-hmm. So for us to do it right, we have to love first. So that means we're going to put ourselves in situations to help people. And may never get nothing out of it. They may never really receive the gospel. But we have to have our mindset on love first. Mm-hmm. Not see the seeking and saving the lost is a shoot off of what God asked us to do, to love first, and then that's a facet of that. Mm-hmm. But there's many facets of our greatest commission, and our greatest commission is love.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think Paul illustrates that very well. And I know we've talked about this, and it's been mentioned many times, maybe not necessarily in this particular class, but you know the shotgun approach doesn't necessarily always work. You know, you can't enter into a room full of people and start blasting them away and telling them about the love of Jesus. It's not about how much you know, it's about how much you care. So, good comment. Anybody else have anything else to add? All right, we'll just go ahead and stop there. Obviously, the classes are still in session, so you are dismissed, but try not to make too much noise. Thank you.